You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM.
Broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Microdosing is the practice of regularly consuming small amounts of psychedelic substances and has gained significant attention for its potential benefits on mental health, cognitive function, and overall well-being. Today, we'll be exploring the safety of microdosing, how it can alleviate symptoms of depression, ADHD, chronic pain, long COVID, as well as enhanced focus and mental acuity and other benefits. So besides the legal and safety issues on microdosing, we'll also be talking about the protocols. Our guests today are James Fadiman and Jordan Gruber. Dr. James Fadiman is a former president of the Institute of Noetic Sciences and professor of psychology. He has been professionally involved with psychedelics for more than 60 years and has been exploring the practice of microdosing psychedelics in depth, drawing on new research and extensive personal accounts from individuals worldwide. He has developed the use of protocols. Fadiman is the author of many books, including The Psychedelic Explorer's Guide, Safe Therapeutic and Sacred Journeys. Jordan Gruber was awarded a JD, which is Juris Doctor degree, and has forged and sculpted authoritative volumes in forensic law. He has written, ghostwritten, and edited more than a dozen books in a wide variety of fields, including psychology, spirituality, finance, and personal development. Fadiman and Gruber are co-authors of Your Symphony of Cells, Discover and Understand More of Who We Are, and Microdosing for Health, Healing, and Enhanced Performance. So please join us for the next hour as we explore the research on microdosing psychedelics with our guests, James Fadiman and Jordan Gruber. I'm speaking with Jim and Jordan from their homes by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Jim and Jordan, welcome.
Glad to be here.
It's so good to have you here. I want to start off, first of all, we need to describe, what is microdosing? What do you mean by that term? Jim, do you want to take that first?
Sure. This is Jim speaking. Microdose is a very small amount, 1/10 to 1/20 of a recreational dose of classic psychedelics, predominantly LSD and psilocybin. It has none of the classic psychedelic amazing effects. It has a whole other raft of effects, which we'll spend the rest of the hour looking at.
Great. Jordan, anything to add to that?
Well, just that when you're microdosing, you don't do it every day. You do it either every other day or every third day. And it's such a small amount that you really barely notice that you're on something. So as Jim said, it's nothing at all like a regular psychedelic experience. It's kept at these very low levels, and that's why it has such a broad spectrum of benefits.
I'm just wondering, does this mean it's kind of homeopathic, you know, that you take these small doses of things? Is it considered similar to that?
Well, not exactly. Homeopathy is really, 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 really tiny doses, okay?
Okay.
Very, very strong homeopathy, in fact, often says there's no molecules of the original substance in it. Microdoses are simply small amounts. Microdoses, micrograms if you're using LSD, and parts of a gram if you're using psilocybin. So it's a real, you can see it, you can measure it. It exists as physical objects. Homeopathy is kind of a little more extreme.
Yeah, homeopathy is more of an energy medicine. And as Jim said, at the higher doses, statistically, you'll often have less than one molecule. With a microdose of LSD, you have quadrillions of molecules, and even more with psilocybin-containing mushrooms. So there's really something there. There's a lot of it there compared to the 40 trillion cells in your body.
But even with that amount, it doesn't produce the hallucinogens that a larger LSD experience would.
It does not produce magnificent visions of the divine. Giant anacondas don't eat you. You don't realize that the trauma that your grandfather had is now being relived through you. All those incredible, amazing breakthroughs, it's different. Microdosing improves the way your whole body can heal itself and feel better and act better. It's very different.
So you're saying that, like, you can actually go through your daily life and microdose. It's not going to affect your ability to function in the world, so to speak.
It will definitely affect your ability to function in the world more efficiently, more effectively, more creatively. Enjoying other people more. At the end of a day of microdosing, the most usual statement is, wow, that was a really good day. And it was a full day of one's normal activities.
In fact, that was the title of Ayelet Waldman's bestseller on microdosing. And what we tell people is that they're often going to forget about it. No one else is going to know that they're on something. They're not going to have any qualms about having their ordinary day. And they're not going to have, as Jim said, any visualizations, any strange mental ideations or changes of consciousness. It remains sub-threshold. We used to say sub-perceptual, but sometimes, mostly, people are aware that something is a little bit different, but then you lose track of it, and you go on and you have that really good day.
Okay, great. What was your motivation of putting this all into a book that you've done? What did you do in order to produce this book? What research did you do?
Well, we're going back now 12 years when I came across and started to discover microdosing, found that nobody else in the psychedelic world was interested, and I really wasn't interested either to start, but people kept saying, you know, it's really good, feels great. Hey, I'm getting something out of this. Wow, I'm no longer so depressed. I'm able to study better. So suddenly I was getting all these reports from friends who were trying it and saying it had value. So being kind of pathologically curious, I started collecting those reports. Well, we're now thousands of reports later. We have reports from 81 countries. We have reports on an amazing number of conditions. And what we began to see is microdosing improves most functioning just the way a vitamin would, which is very different. This is to make it clear that this is not a terrific pharmaceutical. It has nothing to do with that kind of medicine. It's more like exercise is good for you, sleep is good for you, and these very small amounts of psychedelics, which grow naturally, most of them, are also good for you.
Let me retell the story again, a little bit of how this all came to be. So in 2009, Jim had a meeting with a guy named Bob Forte, who told him about microdosing. He had heard about what Albert Hofmann had been doing. And then around 2010, Jim started asking people for reports and who had done it. And reports started coming in. And then he started giving talks. And then reporters heard about the whole thing in Silicon Valley. And so the signal started getting stronger and stronger, all the way up to Ayelet Waldman and Michael Pollan featuring him in the Netflix special, How to Change Your Mind. So this signal, it's kind of a positive feedback loop or a virtuous cycle. Because Jim knew how to assess something like this with all of these years of history and psychology skills, he was able to put it out and then get it back. And to the point now, with the publication of this book, we know so much more than we knew even just a few years ago, because we're bringing together the kind of the hard science that does exist, and there's more and more of that, with a ton of real-world evidence. Some people just call it anecdotal evidence, but we like to think of it as real-world evidence. And when you put those together and you see the big picture, it's really hard to deny that something important and fabulously interesting is going on here.
I'm curious about the difference between hard science and what I think you talk about in the book, first-person accounts, so to speak, right, or maybe citizens' science, yeah. Which I love that phrase, citizen science. And Jim, I know that you made it, I think it was Jim who wrote a comment, or maybe it was you, Jordan, I don't remember which one, but it was about, okay, if you go to a botanical garden or a zoo, you're not looking at it as hard science, as, okay, this is a methodology I'm going to use, or this is my theory of being at the zoo. No, we're just experiencing it. So is that helpful to explain what citizens' participation or citizen science might be?
Yeah. I mean, imagine that you're a scientist and you spend a lot of your days kind of counting things up and doing statistical analysis and eliminating all the variables you can. But when you go to the zoo, when you see an animal that you've never seen before, you don't say, well, how many are of these and how much do they weigh and where can they be found in order of importance? You say, oh, my God, that's amazing. Look at the neck on that thing. Oh, it's called a giraffe. And you have had an experience, vivid, visceral, personal, that may shift your opinion of, for instance, what's possible for animals to be. What we found with human beings is science begins with people having a personal experience. Mm. When enough people have an interesting experience, science says, well, this clearly is of some interest. Let's apply the tools that we have to see if we can learn more or something different about this phenomenon. It doesn't start with somebody in a lab saying, I've never heard of something called microdosing, but I'm sure it exists, so I'm going to start counting it. Makes no sense. So what we're finding is citizen science in almost every area of science precedes what we would call formal kind of mathematical, statistical, restricted science, where you hold it down and only measure what you intend to measure. It's very different.
I want to remind our listeners I'm here with Jim Fadiman, James Fadiman, and Jordan Gruber. They are the co-authors of Microdosing for Health, Healing, and Enhanced Performance. And if you want to know more about this work, you can go to the website microdosingbook.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
Thank you.
I'm here with Jim Vadiman and Jordan Gruber, co-authors of Microdosing for Health, Healing, and Enhanced Performance. So I'd like to talk about the legality of it. Let's start there, because some people will say, okay, wait, is this legal? Jim, you're smiling.
Yes, well, some 40-odd years ago, when Nixon made psychedelics illegal, it was clear even at the time to his inner circle that he made it up. There was no science at all. It was a political move to be able to get at the people he didn't like, which included hippies and people that didn't like the war and so forth. It became, however, a law and has been on the books for many years. It's called the Schedule One, which says there is no medical use and a high possibility of addiction. That's the definition of Schedule One. What the substances on it, however, some of them have nothing to do with that at all. Psychedelics are actually, even in high doses, anti-addictive, a peculiar property. And when Nixon decided it had no medical uses, it was already, LSD, was already the most researched psychiatric drug on the planet. When I got started, I asked Sandoz, the manufacturer, was there any research that I could look at? I was a graduate student, and they sent me two volumes, massive volumes, of the first 1,000 studies, only the abstracts. So there's never been any scientific or medical reason for psychedelics to be illegal, and they currently are in most states, not in some.
Right. Well, there's movements towards decriminalization in different states and towards legalization. So keeping that, most of the microdosing we discuss and that we know about is either with LSD or psilocybin. Jim's exactly right. Those are both federal Schedule One substances. And if you weren't lucky enough to run into a federal marshal, even if you weren't in a legalized place, you could have a problem. But in terms of the safety, well, you'd want to go there. And there are a couple of substances we mentioned, then you'd have to read the book for this, that aren't illegal and that might work in some cases as well. But we don't have to go into that. So people do have to be careful. And what we say is that if you don't have any idea where to get any of this and you're very interested, you can grow your own psilocybin mushrooms now. That's become much, much easier since the first booklet was published by the McKennas in the 70s. But then we tell people to find a local psychedelic society or meetup or organization. And there's many, there's hundreds in the United States. Or talk to people in your life who are younger, in school, or they're going to parties. They're gonna know too. And almost everyone we've spoken to, once they've kind of made up their mind to find a way, they seem to find a way to get what they need so they can see if this is something that will work for them.
So there's sort of an underground movement going on. Is that how you would describe it?
Well, it's hard to say when the percentage of people exceeds a certain number. Is it underground or just quiet? Since psychedelics were made illegal, for example, this is U.S. government figures, over 40 million Americans had taken high doses of either LSD or psilocybin. And if we do that against kind of education level, most of those people were in the top 50% of education. So to say that, you know, it's an underground is a It's kind of pushing the word underground pretty hard. We would say it's remarkable to us how available we have found this to be, because we are always asked that same question. And we say, look around, ask people, and people write back usually in a couple of days and say, thanks. So, yes, it's a problem. And again, decriminalization and a few states are moving forward. We're simply putting out the information of its uses, predominantly its benefits, that cover safety and exceptions, et cetera. But mainly this is so people can understand what their friends are talking about.
So in fact, in the book, it's not that you are recommending it. You're just kind of presenting it. Here's what we've discovered. Here's what people have said. Here is their, you're reporting on their experience. You even mentioned there is one point in the book where you say, if you are hesitant to do this to microdose,
don't.
So say something about that.
Well, we're just clear.
Jim, by the way.
Sorry.
Yeah.
This is just clear that people are looking for information, and then they make their own decisions whether that information is useful to them or not. We're not zealots. We are definitely advocates of things that alleviate suffering in general. That's been really our life's work. And this information, it turns out, is more useful than not having information.
Another way to think of it, another analogy that Jim came up with, is that it's like a sumptuous buffet of possibilities. These are all the things we're hearing from people. Sometimes we only have one case, although we got a new Ehlers-Danlos syndrome report today, right? Did you see that?
Great.
Sometimes there's thousands of reports of things like it helping migraines, for example, and depression. So we're all over the map in how much we know about different things, but we're saying, oh, if you're somebody with long COVID or chronic pain, then maybe you want to hear what has happened with these other people who have tried this.
And you give lots of examples. So maybe we could go into some of those examples. Like, let's talk about depression. That's a huge thing in this country right now. So what did you find about your research and what people are reporting on depression?
High doses, just to give you background, high doses, this is a very popular piece of research. Usually you get what's called treatment-resistant people, because if antidepressants work, they don't show up for your study. So you're getting people who've already tried and failed with conventional medication. High doses with preparation and two sessions with two facilitators and a facility, you're hearing cost in the background. Has about an 80% improvement rate. It's wonderful. Microdosing, as far as we can tell from the reports we've had with some of the studies now coming in internationally, has about a similar success rate. Mushrooms actually don't cost much because they grow. And so we're talking about something where you certainly can work it on your own. You can have a coach, but it's a very different kind of span with similar results. And what we get with depression, and it's worth noting, antidepressants don't make you feel better. They make you feel less worse. They make you feel that the things that make you sad are not as sad. Unfortunately, they also make you less happy. And the report we get from hundreds of people is a term in the antidepressant world called feeling like a zombie, which is low affect. Yeah, I don't feel bad. Yeah, I don't feel good either. Yeah, I don't feel much. Microdosing, and then again, we've seen this in great detail. Similar to my antidepressants, you feel less bad about things that make you bad. You feel less sad. Great. However, the difference is you feel much more glad. You feel happy. You feel relieved. You feel able to communicate. You feel like getting up and doing things. You feel like cooking for yourself. And the report we get over and over and over again is, I'm back. I'm back. What does that mean? I feel like the person I was before I got depressed. That's what we're looking at. And again, this is the area where we have probably the most reports, and we're most enthusiastic.
So what I'm getting from that is that like SSRIs, those pharmaceuticals that people take for depression, depress all the emotions, the happy ones too. So you're saying in microdosing, it is more selective in some ways of what it's doing.
Well, in a sense, it's equally selective, which is you feel less sad because those are emotions that you don't want. You feel more glad, which are the emotions you do want. So it affects both sets of emotions just in the right direction.
Well, I just want to say that Jim is making a very important point that we often talk about, which is that pharmaceuticals, by and large, just mask symptoms. They don't help people get better. while psychedelics, including microdoses of psychedelics, they have a whole systemic effect. So when we talk about the science roughly, we know for one thing that they have an anti-inflammatory effect. So if you're less inflamed, you feel better and you have more resources for healing. We also know that there's a neuroplasticity effect. And neuroplasticity, as you know, is the brain's ability to change and for neurons and populations of neurons to, quote unquote, rewire with each other. So microdosing gives you some of that. You can kind of lock in good things and let go of bad things. And at the same time, there seems to be this general systemic property, even though it's a little unscientific how we describe it, of bringing people back to homeostasis or equilibrium, or back into that sense of, yeah, I feel better and I haven't felt this part of me for a long time, which brings us back to your symphony of selves a little bit as well. So microdosing is always doing all of these things, and this helps explain, again, why it's one of those things like exercise or sleep or nutrition that helps all of the systems in the body, and people actually start getting healthier and feeling better overall.
I want to ask, what have you discovered people are experiencing who have long COVID, something called long COVID, which has been really hard to diagnose, but has just laid people out? They've just, they go into a darkened room and just don't get out because they're just suffering so.
Well, remember, COVID can affect and attack any system, any organ of the body. Conventional pharmaceuticals is highly focused so that there are very few pharmaceuticals that work for the whole body. Okay. So the U.S. government basically says of long COVID, we don't have anything that works very well. That's almost a quote. And we have several million people in the United States alone with different levels of symptoms of long COVID. In the book, we present several different people from different points of view, different levels of COVID, all of whom had been working to get better. They're not just lying around feeling bad. They're using whatever they can. And they found that microdosing, without exception, improved what they call brain fog. You're able to use your mind again. It's running. And we have some other cases where we're dealing with various other symptoms that people report remarkable improvement. And almost always these reports come in with, oh my God, I had no idea this was possible. So what we're looking at is putting out the information that particularly if you're dealing with something for which the conventional modern medicine is honestly saying, you know, we don't know what to do. And here are some cases for you to look at. Again, always make your own decision.
Exactly. I'm here with James Fadiman and Jordan Gruber, and we're talking about microdosing. And the name of their book is Microdosing for Health, Healing, and Enhanced Performance. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and